Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Ben, how are you, man?
Good, Matt. What's up?
Well, we have both seen M. Night Shyamalan's new movie, Split, and this is going to be, I'll just go ahead and get this warning out of the way earlier than usual on Film Nerds Unlimited. This movie is basically impossible to talk about without spoiling it in a disastrous way, so please turn this off if you have not seen the movie.
Well, it is and it isn't, though, right? Because
yeah, sure.
We would not have known to even think about using that this kind of extreme spoiler tag until the moment before we left the theater.
Yes, right.
So it's almost like we're talking about two completely different movies.
It's a great point, and I think we'll get into that. But firstly, this is a movie that came out. I mean, I guess it's been promoted for a good while, but it's definitely one of these movies that we've seen in recent years. I mean, this is a pretty new phenomenon where movies with a relatively low budget are coming out very quickly with not much discussion about their production, and they kind of throw it out there and say, let's just see what happens, and it turns out there's something special about them. 10 Cloverfield Lane kind of comes to mind, too. And this is another movie from M. Night Shyamalan where it kind of snuck up on us. It had a relatively small budget for him. And despite not getting a ton of promotion, it actually has debuted to a very strong box office. Firstly, that sort of external part of this is very interesting to me, and you can comment on that if you want, but just the movie itself, what are your feelings walking out of this movie?
Well, again, my feelings were drastically affected right before I walked out. I have two separate feelings, and I'm sure that there's some sort of like psychological test that exists that formed the basis for this sort of like divided thinking on the same thing. Like once you have one piece of context that you didn't have, you know, right after you, you know, in this case, finished watching a movie, you get brand new information that changes the entire complexion of the movie that you just watched after technically the movie is over because the credits have hit, right? But there's a moment that happens once the credits hit that changes everything about it. I'm having trouble sort of processing that in terms of, well, does that change how I feel about Split before I got that information? And I guess in a way it does, just in terms of the larger context of the movie, but probably more specifically M. Night Shyamalan's filmography and my opinion of him as a director and as a storyteller. So without getting specific yet, if I'm just focusing on the movie itself before we got to that moment, I think it's a nice little thriller, and it's not something that I would put, say, on the level of Unbreakable or The Sixth Sense or, in my opinion, The Village. And I know that there are big fans of Signs out there, and perhaps Signs is a better overall movie than this. But, you know, look, Split is a rare horror thriller that is above average these days because of how much bad we get. And I think, you know, Shyamalan, you and I talked about The Visit right after that came out, and we're fans of his. I think the fact that I went on day one to see his brand new movie, I wouldn't necessarily say, look, he's my favorite director or even one of my favorite directors, but I respect him in that I think he's a unique storyteller. I don't think anybody would have disputed that after the first handful of movies that he made, but he certainly sort of fell off that track and wandered aimlessly for a little bit. That being said, I saw The Happening happily in theaters, and I saw The Visit happily in theaters, and here I was for Split again. And again, I think what he can give us left of his devices, if he's not overthinking it, which he is wont to do, see Lady in the Water, he can make a damn good thriller, a pretty taut, character-driven, very technically well-made thriller, which is what you get here, that is driven by a really impressive, multifaceted performance, if you will, from James McAvoy, a guy who's extremely talented. And I don't know that maybe we've seen him reach his full potential, but I think Split, even though it's a very small movie that has a very small budget, it is, I think, taking the right steps in terms of showing you what an actor like him can do. And I think that's what people, outside of what we'll talk about a little later, I think that's the biggest thing that people are going to take from this, even beyond the fact that Shyamalan made a good movie again. The fact that James McAvoy is the real star of the show, and he gave us something, even if he hams it up and chews the scenery a little bit too much at times, he gave us something pretty special, I think.
Yeah, and you know, there's a couple of things. Again, let me try and talk about how I was feeling about the movie right up until the title card, which is, I felt similarly to you. I think it was well made. It's a good looking movie. You know, I think Shyamalan has always been a guy who does interesting things with the camera, and he does it again here. Like, the opening sequence right away distinguishes this movie from most of the cheap horror thrillers that come out, because it's a very quick, simple sequence that sets up the premise of the whole movie, and they get you there in like less than 5 minutes probably. And the way it's shot is really, really interesting to look at. And right there, I think that was sort of my first thought watching that opening sequence is, okay, I mean, this is a $10 million movie, but this is a director that's a lot more talented than that. You know, this is where he's ended up, but this guy is very, very skilled at what he's doing. And I think as an experience and as a screenplay, it actually feels a bit slower than a lot of his other movies. There are times where I feel like it drags and maybe takes a little too long to get where it's going. And, you know, I like the performances. I definitely like James McAvoy. I think there's some moments in the script that suffer from the same issues that a lot of Shyamalan movies do, which is I don't really get his sense of humor. I think it's a little off-putting sometimes. You know, there are especially a couple of moments with the character Hedwig that I feel like are kind of weirdly these little spikes of humor that come at times where you don't really, humor doesn't feel entirely appropriate, and maybe he's doing that on purpose. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to make it feel more unsettled. But that's always been kind of a thing for me. It was one of my major gripes with The Visit too. Just odd humor. But other than that, you know, it's a very enjoyable movie. It all makes sense within itself. There's good performances outside of McAvoy too. I really like Anya Taylor-Joy. I think she's very interesting, and she handles this part well. I like what they do with her character's background being kind of folded into the story. You know, and then let's go ahead and get to the elephant in the room, which is the ending when we find out that actually what we've been watching all along is a sequel to Unbreakable. And I have to say, Ben, the more that I've sat with this and thought about it, the more that I think it doesn't actually change the movie as much as we maybe think it does in that moment where we find it out. I think what it does for me is it suddenly makes me view the movie in a different light and makes me kind of have a little bit better appreciation for what Shyamalan was trying to do with this movie. You know, in the same way that the ending of Unbreakable does too. When you get to the end of that movie and you realize actually what you've been watching is a superhero movie. When you get to the ending of this movie, what you realize is I actually haven't been watching a psychological thriller. I've been watching a supervillain origin story. And it makes the pace make more sense to me. It makes some of the other choices that Shyamalan made throughout this movie, suddenly they kind of feel like they fit a little bit better.
Yeah, and, you know, it's complicated because you mentioned the young woman who is, I guess, what you would call the protagonist of this movie. And I mentioned before, like, after we find out what you just said, that this is basically a sequel to Unbreakable or whatever it is, it feels like a couple of different movies. But even within the movie split itself, prior to knowing that, I kind of felt that way, too, about it, like in terms of the flashbacks when we get to that character, in terms of the character of the psychologist played by Betty Buckley, who gives a really good performance as this psychologist who attempts to help James McAvoy with his disorder, which is known as dissociative identity disorder. Basically, he's got multiple personalities. She's very good, but the movie kind of goes back and forth very clearly from one thing to the next, one thing to another, where you have this sort of story, this little horror movie about James McAvoy imprisoning these three high school girls and how do they get out of it. And then you have the story of the psychologist and her interactions with James McAvoy and how she comes to grips with the developments that she sees within him. Again, we had that. I had trouble sort of piecing these things together in terms of when ultimately one through line and sort of trying to understand the big idea that Shyamalan is constantly driving at with these movies that he's been so successful with and not as successful with, and stuff like Lady in the Water and The Happening. Above all, with all those movies, with all their big twist endings and everything, he has a lot to say about something very specific, and he does it in a very big way. Split is a little more self-contained, I think, than those, and you know, it's probably a result of having a $10 million budget, or at least that's the reported production budget. And I think that can be a good thing and a bad thing. And, you know, he's proven that he can make big hits, and so, you know, it's a little surprising that he's only working with such a limited budget, but he obviously had that rough patch that maybe put him back to square one in a couple of ways, which forced him to make a movie like The Visit, and now Split, and he's working his way back up. But now we see that this movie is so successful in week one, we might be seeing Shyamalan get similar opportunities to what he had after those big movies like Sixth Sense and Unbreakable and Signs. So it's exciting just to sort of like revisit the trajectory of Shyamalan and see where he's going as, you know, a filmmaker and what projects he might have up his sleeve. But, you know, I think what's interesting here, you know, specifically here, what I really want to focus on, or what I would like to if I wasn't so distracted by what has become the big story of the movie, which is the sequel news. But you mentioned Shyamalan as a technician and what he does with the camera. And I think that's probably his biggest strength overall, just as a filmmaker, is where he puts the camera and what all he's doing within the context of specific frames. And that's at play here again. You have to constantly be aware of every single side of a Shyamalan frame. And that is to his credit in a big way. And that's been true in everything that he's made, whether it's something as great as Unbreakable or something as weird and terrible as The Happening, he's at least doing something, and he's doing something completely conscious and is cognitive of the fact that he wants to tell a story through this lens and with these characters, and he wants to surprise you and catch you off guard. And that the same is very true for Split. And so for me, if nothing else, at least reinforces the fact that Shyamalan is really gifted. I don't know that he really puts it all together with this movie overall, and he certainly teases us with the idea that something bigger is coming down the road, and something of the likes of which we haven't really seen in terms of an original idea sort of taking a life of its own and becoming its own cinematic universe. That's actually really exciting when you think about it, in terms of like the cinematic landscape we are living in today in terms of the sequel machine and pre-existing properties. This is all coming from his mind, and these are all his characters, and he's playing within this playground and asking us if we'll join. And I think that people are excited about the prospect of where he suggested we could go with this post-credit sequence. And I guess I'm going to count myself among those people.
I agree. I think that it's a really cool idea to take the expanded universe approach to small, sort of independent feeling character studies. Because look, it doesn't have to be some massive franchise thing where they all end up getting together. It's cool to just draw little lines connecting them. And I think that was what was so fun about the last moment of this movie, is it doesn't have to ever lead to anything else. It's a cool moment in this movie if nothing else ever comes from this. You know, it's not necessarily setting up a sequel, although certainly that could happen, and I think there could be demand for it based on the excitement that's come out of this. But even if this is all it ever was, it's really cool that he drew that line, and it fits perfectly. I mean, this is a movie, both of the two movies involved here are basically small, sort of intimate psychological thrillers about people who, in a relatively grounded, realistic-looking way, develop sort of superhuman abilities. And they're movies that are dark, certainly, and deal with, you know, very serious themes, but they're also kind of fun, and they're not miserable and hopeless feeling. So they do kind of lend themselves to being part of something bigger that people might want to go see the next installment of. So I definitely enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I don't know how your theater experience was with this, Ben, and how they reacted, but it was actually one of the most unique things. I've never seen anything happen like this in a theater at the end of this movie. I was actually sitting in front of three teenage girls, and they all, at the end of the movie, they all kind of audibly start going, "Hold on, what's going on? Like, am I missing something? I don't understand what just happened." And suddenly, like, a bunch of people around them all start, like, chiming in and talking about it with each other. And so I find myself kind of in the middle of this group discussion of what we had just seen. And there's one of the guys that was involved, like, turns to me and goes, like, "So is there going to be another one? Is there going to be a sequel?" And I'm like, "I don't know, man. I'm just learning this, too. Like, I didn't know any of this before the last 30 seconds." And it was just kind of a cool little buzz moment at the end of the movie. And I've never really seen that happen before. And it's something it could only happen in a situation where the movie is somehow connected to something bigger that we all cared about, and still small scale enough that it didn't get out, which is so hard to do today, you know?
Yeah, you know, my initial feeling walking out of the theater when it happened was, Shyamalan is nothing if not interesting, you know? Like,
yep.
And it's for better or worse, he did something we've not really seen before. At least it didn't really feel like we had as it was happening. Because I remember thinking, like, I think a big response people are having is laughter. Like, in
yeah.
The fact that he was bold enough, it's like, nobody... Like, okay, maybe in, like, 2002 or whenever that movie came out, like, people were like, "Oh, man, I can't wait to see what David Dunn and Mr. Glass do again. That would be cool." But he kind of moved on and did all this other stuff and became Shyamalan we know as he is now. But nobody ever thought, like, okay, when's that Unbreakable sequel coming? Here we
it's
go.
So great.
And then it happens, and you're just like, "What the hell? Okay, well, yeah, good for you, man." Like, you're one bold son of a bitch. Like, I'm with you, I guess, just because you
that,
swung for the fences.
It's the sequel no one asked for, but
right.
we're kind of glad we got it afterwards.
Yeah, we're gonna get it though, and look, I loved Unbreakable, and I would have seen an Unbreakable sequel had it followed the normal pattern that I guess sequels, you know, tend to follow. But man, oh man, yeah. If nothing else, it caught us off guard, and again, it gave us that sort of like weird feeling as longtime moviegoers who have become so jaded by the process. It hit us with something different, at least a feeling that was a little different. And I gotta say, like, it's pretty refreshing. Like, even if I wasn't interested in Unbreakable and I thought it was stupid and whatever, at least I was laughing. At least I'm up for it in that moment. But, you know, it's really funny, Matt. It's also kind of a, I don't know what kind of larger commentary he's making, or if he just wants to set up this universe and he actually wants to tell these stories and make these movies. But, you know, we talking about that greater movie landscape and sort of what Hollywood is now, the expectations we have, how we're conditioned to watch these big superhero comic book movies. We're trained now to wait until the end of credits or until the end of the initial run of credits, and we get these scenes. So it's like, are we supposed to expect that from movies now that aren't
small psychological thrillers?
Yeah, exactly. That aren't comic books. Well, so it's funny. It's like, you know what? Like, this is like Shyamalan saying, you know what? This is my comic book movie, and you know what? I'll use one of those post-credit sequences.
Yep.
Since it's all the rage, and we'll see what people think about it. So I think that, again, if nothing else, it's interesting.
You know, it's cool because what he just did, I think if we go back like 2 years ago, we were having discussions about how washed up this guy was, how he was such a disappointment, and, you know, just never went anywhere after it all sort of fell apart for him. And here he comes back, and he makes a found footage horror movie, and he makes a superhero movie. And he does it in unique ways. He has something new to bring to the table in these two genres that are beyond played out. You know, I mean, they're certainly successful financially, but they're genres that I think you would have thought it's all been done. We've seen it all in these two genres, and he brings something really interesting and refreshing and unique to them, and that's kind of the way he made his comeback, is to say, I'm going to jump into this thing that everybody else is already doing and doing successfully, and I'm going to do it differently, and it's still going to be successful. And I think that's really bold. Like you said, it's like he chose the most difficult path to come back through and did it anyway and didn't sacrifice his own identity in how he did it. These are not perfect movies, but I think they're really interesting movies, and I think that they're surprising and it's, I think it's cool that they're successful. And I certainly am, at this point, this is a guy that I'm very anxious to see where he goes next and what he does.
Yeah, and you know, what I hope it doesn't do ultimately is take the attention away from the movie we just watched and the one that he just made. And then it makes you wonder, well, how much of Shyamalan's heart was in the actual movie, or was that just a 2-hour distraction until we got to the big moment and that's what he really wanted to do here?
But
you know,
it does work. I mean, I think it's still good on its own. I don't think that I would be this excited about it if it didn't have the ending, but I think I would have said, you know, hey, good, look, two movies that were pretty good back to back from him. I'll take it. But he's also, you know, I think what's so, you can't throw the ending out, because I don't know how much of a chance you have had to read about this movie at this point, but this is actually something that he's been working on for a long time. This is not something he dreamed up recently. This whole movie is basically built around a deleted idea from Unbreakable that he just kind of kept in a drawer. And, you know, I don't know how it came about that this got greenlit, but, you know, they made the visit with Blumhouse and it went well. And now his next thing that he made with them was an old idea that he had probably thrown away or given up hope on ever making. And he made it. And he made it probably so much more interesting than what he would have done with it 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I'm always a little skeptical about stories like that.
Yeah.
So just pulling out the card, this was the plan all along card, you know, that the Carlton Cuse, Damon Lindelof thing was lost. And
I don't know if he'd say this was the plan all along, but
I just know that
I do buy that it was something that was part of Unbreakable that he then has created into its own thing later.
Yeah, and you know, what's funny about that, on the other side of that, is the way, when the trailer came out and now that I've watched it, it does kind of have like a weird late 90s, early 2000s vibe to it. Where
it does.
Like, maybe this was meant for 10, 15 years ago, you know, in some weird way that I can't quite explain. But, yeah, and, you know, credit to Blumhouse, too, because, again, this goes into the for better or worse folder, but they're making movies on the cheap that can make a lot of money. And if it gives talented storytellers like M. Night Shyamalan more opportunities, even if they're making movies at a lower budget, I think that puts them in a box where they challenge themselves as storytellers, and he's done that for two movies now, and I think both of them are net positives for him as a filmmaker. And if he's made his best movies to date and those are in the past, that's fine, but if this is the kind of stuff we're going to get from him from now on, I think that's okay, just in terms of him sort of finding himself again as a director, at least reinventing himself. But I think Split is honestly a step back into the right direction, even more so than The Visit was. So I guess he's taken two steps in that direction. So I guess as somebody who has followed his career now, basically his entire career, I still have yet to see his debut, Wide Awake, with Rosie O'Donnell, and maybe I will one day, but I think it's a net positive.
Well, this movie does unfortunately leave one big question unanswered, which is that how did the drug dealer from Unbreakable end up becoming a security guard for the psychologist at her office?
I don't know, but I just hope that Rosie O'Donnell's in his next movie and we find out.
It's all connected.
Yeah. Well, Matt,
how come the ghost from Sixth Sense is at the end of this movie?
I knew he was dead the whole time. Matt, I guess, again, like the sort of show-stopping element of this movie is James McAvoy, who has obviously been in bigger movies and has starred in some stuff like, you know, these X-Men movies as Professor X, and he's been in Wanted, which was seen by a lot of people, and Atonement, where he was the lead in a prestige picture. But I don't think that McAvoy has broken through as, you know, in the eyes of sort of both sects of one, you have the, you know, the serious film lovers who might consider him like one of the go-to, you know, top acting guys, versus the mainstream audience who might see him as a big movie star who can star in tentpole movies. I think Split makes a case for him, perhaps on both ends of the spectrum. Do you think that, in a weird way, this is kind of like a star-making role for him, even though he is a star at this point?
Well, it depends on what this movie ends up doing beyond opening weekend. I could see this. I mean, to me, if you've never heard of James McAvoy before, or you can't put a name with the face, and he's that kind of guy to you, this could be a performance that sticks with you that you then notice a lot later, you know, and say, oh, that's a guy from Split. Because it's very strange, and it's a remarkable performance, even if there's moments. Like I said, the Hedwig portions walk that fine line of Razzie worthiness at times. But there's a lot of stuff he does that's a lot more subtle. I mean, there's several scenes in this movie where he is actually one personality playing another one and trying to get away with it. And so there's not some kind of big dramatic, like, you know, tensing of the body to switch between one to the other. There's a sort of like weird moment where she calls him out and says, I know which one you are. And he kind of slowly gives up the ruse. That's one of the more interesting moments in the movie as far as his performance goes. And, you know, I think the mythology around the character really helps the performance a lot too, because you have to know what's going on. They have to kind of have these scenes where they're giving you the rules of his performance for it to work. But I think Shyamalan does a good job of that, and I think he sets it up very well. And I think that the performance really follows those rules really interestingly. But once you have the context, I'm kind of interested to watch it again because I want to see the earlier scenes in the movie and kind of follow along with now what I know is actually happening. I also feel like there's probably a lot that was cut because there's some other characters, some other personalities that we only get very, very small moments with, but also, you know, in a way that kind of gives it more depth because it seems like there's so much more going on than even what we can see in the movie.
Yeah, they say that there are 23 personalities, and we really only spend time with, like, maybe five of them, like, a lot of time.
Right.
And, you know, if it had bounced around, you know, from one to another, and you know, among 23 different characters, then you're barking up the wrong tree, I think. But, you know, what I think is interesting about this is, like, if Split had, like, premiered at Sundance, and James McAvoy was, like, an unknown actor who landed this gig with his buddy filmmaker, this seems like the kind of performance to me where people would be like, oh my God, this guy's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Have you seen him in Split, you know, like in the mold of like a Chopper, Eric Bana, or a Bronson with Tom Hardy in sort of that mold, but it's not, you know? And so that's what I think is interesting about it, is that he's an established guy who is, you know, at this point in his career, he's making X-Men movies. He's taking a bit of a chance in terms of working with M. Night Shyamalan, who was previously established but lost his way. But I don't know if it was just a matter of McAvoy thinking it was a good opportunity. He didn't get paid a lot. But maybe he thought, okay, I'm going to work with M. Night Shyamalan, the guy who made this and that, and, you know, was once a great filmmaker in the eyes of myself and many. So I think it's an interesting choice for James McAvoy, and I wonder if and where it might lead for him. But, yeah, so that's kind of a weird takeaway, I think, just from the performance. And I know people are singling it out as, like, being electrifying and the backbone of the movie. And I think that there's definitely some regard to that. But, yeah, I guess between him and Shyamalan, like, it is kind of a showcase for both of them in a variety of ways.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, for him, I'm not sure that I've seen enough of what James McAvoy has done outside of his kind of bigger studio stuff. But this in a weird way, though, doesn't really, I don't know, there's moments where it definitely does feel like what you're talking about, this sort of like out there independent type role, but it's also a very broad performance. I don't think I would say that this is necessarily a movie that's shying away from its sort of genre roots, you know. I mean, this is an over-the-top movie.
It gets very silly at times.
Yeah, for sure. And it wants to, you know. I mean, it is playing in a genre. It's not really concerned with authenticity of what it's talking about. I have no idea dissociative personality disorder or whatever it is if remotely like that. This is taking an idea because it works in a movie, and saying, all right, we'll make up some rules to it. Here's how it works. And, you know, I think that the latter scenes in the movie, too, are really effective. I think when this movie starts to really move towards the sort of supervillain end of things, I thought he was really good at that. And it's kind of surprising. I guess, you know, it sort of made me think a little bit about Red Dragon, that later parts of the movie where it really gets legitimately scary and turns into more of a horror movie than just the sort of psychological thriller. I think that in itself, the direction the movie goes is surprising, not just the very end, but really the last act of the movie. I can't really say that I saw that coming, that direction that the movie goes in the final act. I didn't expect that was the movie I was going to be watching when I started it.
So my last question for you is, where are you with Shyamalan now? Because it seemed like you were definitely on the more positive side with The Visit than many. Do you think that this movie inches him a little closer in that direction? Do you like this better than The Visit? Do you think that we're on our way to getting the old Shyamalan back, or are we kind of where we were when The Visit came out?
I think it's a better movie than The Visit, and I do think, though, I think The Visit had some more, was probably a little bit higher energy, a little bit more inventive, and he was pushing his own boundaries as a filmmaker a little bit more in The Visit. But this is to me a better movie, and it doesn't have as many moments where I thought, I really wish he didn't do that. I really wish he could take that part back. And I think, in a way, the fact that it's a little more restrained is a good sign. And for now, I am very excited about who he is as a filmmaker. But I think a lot of it may have to do with the fact that he's working on a smaller scale. And so, you know, we'll see where he goes next. I'm kind of, right now, hopeful that he continues to work with Blumhouse instead of having this be some kind of ramp up to getting back in the big studio system and making big budget movies, because I don't think that was ultimately a good place for him, and I don't think it led to movies that, look, obviously his first few were very successful and I liked them a lot still, but I think where it ultimately led him was to making really expensive movies that people didn't really like and that felt very lost and felt like they didn't even know what they wanted to be as movies. So I think he seems to have a little bit more focus. He has clearly come to these last two movies with a clear idea of what he was trying to do, and I think he pulled it off effectively in both cases. So that's what I want to see more of. I want to see more Shyamalan just have a great idea and go pull it off and execute it. And don't get caught up in trying to make this the ultimate, you know. Just go make a movie and make it based around a great idea, because this guy also, he clearly right now is generating excellent ideas for movies, which is what he was always about, you know. He's a premise guy. He has great ideas for movies, and he also ends up executing them pretty well too. But more than anything else, I think the thing that separates him is, just even on paper, I mean, this is a guy who's come up with a bunch of movies that, when you first heard the pitch, it must have been awesome. It must have been apparent from the get-go that The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable were going to be good movies, because the very basic ideas behind them are really cool and interesting and unique. And I think he's back to that again, and that's exciting to see.
Yeah, definitely his, I know that he too unfairly gets pigeonholed into he's the twist ending guy, but definitely.
Well, he is, but that's part of the movie. I mean, that's part of the idea of the movie, you know?
Right.
That's why he's a great idea guy.
Right. I mean, he's sort of in the mold of Rod Serling, you know? Like, I mean,
yeah,
it's just,
sure.
It's what you do, be happy with what you do if people like it. But, yeah, certainly his best, like, big moment in a long time, sort of in that same vein as those movies that have those big twists. So good for him. And, look, an Unbreakable sequel shouldn't cost that much. I mean, the superhero wears a freaking raincoat, for crying
right.
out loud. So it shouldn't be that much, you know?
Do they have to get the rights for that character from Disney? Like, how does that work?
I don't know. I don't know. But apparently it's on the table, and it
yeah.
another one of these movies might happen, so that's definitely interesting. But yeah, and then if you keep doing this, great. Just, you know, no little rapping kids would be nice.
This movie has zero rapping children in it. It does unfortunately have a dance scene, but other than that, it's fine.
Yeah, okay. And God, it's a f***ing Unbreakable sequel.
It's amazing. I honestly, like, 2 days ago, I had no idea that I would give two shits about this movie. I really didn't. I thought this would be something that I would idly watch and have an opinion on and move on. But now he's in a, you know, 30-second shot, he makes the movie worthy of so much discussion.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.